Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest tonight grew up in Babylon, New York, graduated from the U.S. Naval Academy, and became a Navy SEAL. He was selected for the NASA Astronaut Corps in 1984, and he's been in space four times, totaling 159 days. In late 2000, he was the U.S. commander for Expedition 1, the first crew ever stationed at the International Space Station. His name, Captain Bill Shepard, a modern
Now back to Anything is Possible with Jack Krasula on News Talk 760 WJR.
Good evening, this is Jack Krasula, and our guest tonight is Captain Bill Shepard, who was the commander for Expedition 1, the first crew stationed at the International Space Station. Captain, welcome. It's an honor to have you.
Hey, old Jack. Thanks for having me on your show.
Can we start by talking about your childhood and your parents?
Well, I grew up in Long Island. It's on the eastern part of New York State, kind of a maritime environment. My dad worked in aerospace, and back in the early 50s, Long Island was one of the centers in the country for people who worked on airplanes. And I grew up there and then traveled around a little bit with my folks and finished high school in the Washington, D.C. area in Arizona.
Your dad was a Navy aviator. What's the biggest things you learned from your dad, Captain, and what's the biggest things you learned from your mom?
Well, my dad was a pilot in World War II. He went to school at Yale University, and Yale had a tradition going back even to World War I for people that graduated and went in the Navy as aviators, and it was called the Yale Aviation Unit. And my dad did that right before the start of World War I, and just the way things happened in the war, he was a ferry pilot, and those are people that take all kinds of airplanes and move them around. He spent a lot of time flying transports in the Pacific and then served the whole war and got out at the end. I think the things that that I learned from my dad were just he was an engineer, and I just always had a fascination for mechanical things and how things worked, and I guess I got that from my dad.
And what did you learn from your mom, Captain?
Well, my mom's a real interesting character. She's still with me. She lives down in St. Petersburg. She's retired, and she is one of those people that pretty much whatever you want to do, if you put your mind to it, you'll get it done. I think I learned that from her.
You went to the Naval Academy.
I did.
You earned a BS degree in aerospace engineering.
Right, right.
And like your dad, you wanted to be a pilot.
Well, yeah.
Never got there.
That's true. I thought for the time that I was at the Naval Academy, I was interested in the Navy from an early age. And the more I was around the Navy, the more I liked it. So I decided to go to the Naval Academy, and I really wanted to fly. But as I finished up my last year there, I couldn't quite get past the eye exam, and it was a time in the Navy at the end of Vietnam when there were way too many pilots and airplanes, so it was real tough to get a pilot billet. So I went another direction. I joined what was then called the Frogmen, but it's now the SEAL community in the Navy.
There's a terrific camaraderie amongst the Navy SEALs for life. Can you talk to us about the SEAL community?
Well, it's certainly one of the more elite military outfits in the world. Our training is very rigorous. It's tough physically and mentally. But I think the emphasis from the beginning is for people who work together as a team, and this is what's brought home in the way the training is conducted, and it makes people, once they're through that and they're in a SEAL team, that I think that they have a very unique association with other people that, that are in the team to get things done. It's very much like an elite professional athletic team, and it's just, I think this is probably one of the few places in the military where that that has really been fundamental.
Through your career, you've had some challenging days and initiatives. There's a Navy SEAL saying, quote, "The only easy day was yesterday." And Captain Bill Shepherd, in Business Today, it's tough. Talk to us about "the only easy day was yesterday."
Well, it's actually each class that goes through the basic underwater demolition SEAL training, they call it BUDS, that's an acronym. Every class tries to come up with something in the way of a saying or a memento that, that will be become part of the SEAL legend. And I can say that "the only easy day was yesterday" wasn't our class's motto, but it was the class right before us, and it seems to have stuck. This goes back to 1971, but what it means is that one of the commanding officers who runs the SEAL school out in Coronado, California, said it best, and his name was Tom Nelson, and Tom Lawson said to me, and he was a 06, just before you make admiral, he said, you get to work, you get your cup of coffee, you go outside on the PT grinder, and you got 300 guys who are trainees trying to become this elite group of Navy SEALs, and they don't want to ask how tough it is, how high the mountain is. All they want to know is which direction to run to get at it. And I think that's the attitude that really sets those guys apart. Just means that it was tough yesterday, but so what? And my head is down, my arms are pumping. I'm moving out in the direction to face the new challenge. That's what that means.
We're talking to Shep, Captain Bill Shepherd, who was a mission specialist on 3 space shuttle flights, and I'm Jack Krasula. And this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Once again, here's your host, Jack Krasula.
We're talking to Captain Bill Shepherd. Captain, how did a Navy SEAL who spent all his work under the sea, or in the sea, ever become an astronaut in 1984?
I get asked that question a lot, and my casual reply is that I paid money, but that's somewhat of a joke. I went down to NASA in 1980, and I had been in the SEAL community for 10 years, 9 or 10 years, and I thought that there was a lot of parallel between the stuff that NASA did with spacesuits on and what we do in the Navy as divers. And I thought at the time that that was something that NASA would really value. And when I got down to Houston for my interviews, I felt more and more that was the case. But unfortunately, in that go-around in 1980, it was very competitive, and I did not get selected. And so I just kind of said, well, that was an interesting, experiment, but I'll forget about that for a while. And then 4 years later, I got an announcement in the mail from NASA if I was interested in applying to the program again. And then about a week later, I got another announcement that had been sent to a previous address that I had lived at, and it was misrouted. And I got the second one saying the same thing. It was a duplicate. And I'm thinking to myself, maybe there's a message here. So I went down to Houston in 1984 and went through the same process and the interview, and was finally accepted.
Folklore has it that The panel at NASA, made up primarily of veteran space flyers, asked you one standard question, quote, what is it that you do better than anyone else in the world? And your purported response was, I kill people with a knife. True? Untrue?
Well, it's a really good story. I didn't start it. It has transcended into urban legend, but I've been asked by the media in several instances when I got to the program down there, and I said, look, it's such a good story, I should probably not confirm or deny that it ever happened. I really think it was started by one of my fellow astronaut candidates down there, and without naming names, but I think one of my good buddies did that for me.
Let's jump ahead, Captain Bill Shepard, to 1988, and you go up STS-27, a top-secret mission, your first space flight. What can you tell us, if anything, about that?
Well, I was very lucky. I trained starting in 1984 as an astronaut candidate. My jobs included working down in Florida at the Kennedy Space Center as part of the astronaut closeout crew. And these are the people that put the astronauts into the space shuttle and make sure all the switches are set and all the payloads are straight in the cabin and basically ease the process of getting the crew through launch day starting early in the morning. So I did that for about a year. And then I got assigned to STS-27 with Captain Hoot Gibson, who was a twice flown shuttle astronaut, and a great mission. We took up a military payload, launched from the Kennedy Space Center in December, flew what they call a high inclination orbit, which means right as the shuttle takes off, the easiest way into space for the shuttle is to go straight east towards Africa, but the shuttle's also capable of turning so that the orbit is inclined, so it goes more north and south every time it goes around the Earth. And we flew what's called a high inclination mission, and our orbit passed up to 57 degrees north and 57 degrees south, and that's where the requirements for our mission put us. But in that, you get to see all of Northern Europe, South America, and a lot of places that about half the shuttle flights up to that point, or less than half, were high inclination missions. Most of them were flying straight east, where you see the equator in 26 degrees either side of it, but you don't see the high northern latitudes, and that was very spectacular.
Can you share with us what it's like the first 10, 15 seconds of a flight?
Well, you know, you'd be surprised at how fast everything happens. You've got a lot of training. You've probably flown the ascent, which is 8.5 minutes. You've probably flown that 1,500 times in simulation, so you know what to expect, what all the indications will be on the cockpit. The initial impulse coming up off the pad on the boosters is somewhat unique. It's like getting hit in the rear by a dump truck going maybe 15 miles an hour, and the pressure, the G-forces just keep right on building. But to be completely honest, within inside the maybe 5 minutes before countdown till you get up on orbit when the engines shut down, the crew is so busy, you don't have a lot of time for idle reflection. You are very regimented, looking at what you have to look at and being prepared for almost anything that goes on.
When I met you at John Osterweil's house, you know, a few months ago, you told me about the astronaut's prayer. Can you share that with us?
Well, there's a tradition. The astronauts stay at the Kennedy Space Center for about a week before their launch. The rest of the time, they're there for intermittently for training, but not for generally for long periods of time. And the place they live is called the crew quarters, and it's several miles from the launch complex. And when you get to the last kind of outpost before the van that takes the crew out to the pad itself, it's called launch control. And generally, the chief of the astronaut office leaves the crew there, and he goes to fly a couple of weather flights in the two to three hours before launch just to check out the conditions for landing the shuttle if the shuttle has to come back to Florida for an abort. And there's a tradition that's been started where the chief of the astronaut office has a little prayer in the astro van right before he jumps out, and all the crew gets together, and he says, "Hey, well, let's say the astronaut prayer now. For those of you that don't know it, it's, well, may the Lord help us if we screw this up." And that's the astronaut prayer. Hmm. Kind of tongue-in-cheek, but I think it's interesting.
You went up four times.
I did.
Is it different each time when you're ascending?
Well, I think physically it's very similar, but it's kind of like watching a movie over and over again. You pick up little subtle.
Welcome back to Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Now, here's your host, Jack Krasula.
Welcome back. We're with Captain Bill Shepard, a true modern-day American hero. Captain, today, when you walk the beach with Beth, on a clear, star-filled night, and you look up, what do you think about?
Well, I'll tell you, it's kind of interesting. Two things come to mind. One is, I remember I was not much into astronomy. It's kind of an involved study. But over in Russia, when I studied, we had star recognition, and we use that in emergencies when you lose your navigational reference and you have to realign everything by looking at stars. I had a very good instructor over there who had literally hundreds of stars and their position in the night sky memorized in his head. And you could ask him any time of the night or day, you could say, "Where is this star?" Of course, you'd have to converse in Russian. And he would think for a minute and kind of orient himself. This way, he'd do this in broad daylight. And he could point with his finger in a direction where he thought that star was. And he'd be pretty close. And I thought, boy, that is an amazing. Every time I look at the night sky, I think about how amazing that guy and his skill were. The other thing is, I like to watch the space station go over. It's a very bright object in the night sky. It's not as bright as the moon, but it's getting there. And I look at the space station fly by, and I say, boy, I was part of the team that helped put that up there and make it run. That is a very interesting feeling.
Speaking of which, it's 1993, and you move into the space station management.
Right.
Then you get named to be the American commander for the first expedition of the International Space Station. And in 1995, you have to go to Russia to train with two Russian cosmonauts. Talk to us about that, please.
Well, it's kind of a lot of history. President Reagan in the mid-80s launched a station program called Space Station Freedom. And in 1993, when the Clinton administration was in Washington, they were struggling with changes to the budget in the NASA program. And they required that NASA kind of re-vector what we were doing. We had some significant management challenges. We'd been through six major redesigns. We had a large number of international partners that were not happy. And so part of my job on the management team in 93 on was to try and reorganize all that, which we did. But the key element there was to integrate what the Russians were planning on doing on a follow-on station to their Mir, which is the name for their station. Their program was called Mir 2. So we embraced the Russians and brought them into the space station program, and that's where this joint cooperation with the Russians all began. As part of that, I was very fortunate in 95 to be named to be the commander of the first crew, and I moved over to Russia in 96 and started training over there. And a lot of interesting experiences, but I joined my two crewmates, Yuri Gadzenko, an Air Force colonel in the Russian Air Force, and Sergei Krikalev, a civilian engineer, and we trained for almost 5 years for our mission in 2000.
How much vodka Captain, did you have to drink in those 5 years?
Well, not as much, not as much as the Russians wanted me to, but you know, deep down, I've worked in the military with probably 8 or 10 armed forces from different countries, several in Asia, Europe, Scandinavia, the Mideast, South America. And I can tell you, out of all those groups that I've been in contact with, I found that the Russians were most like Americans in terms of what was important to them, the way that they thought, what they laughed at, how they dealt with their kids, just their outlook on life. And I was very impressed with some of the common. We don't have a similar culture, and we speak a different language. But as far as personal worldview, if you will, we have very similar alignments.
For 5+ years, you're in Russia.
Just under 5. I mean, full time.
One setback after another, political, monetary, and you've been working at this for 7 years, and you finally get up in late 2000. In today's world of instant gratification, I want it today. Talk to us, if you will, Captain Bill Shepherd, about patience and persistence.
Well, one of my heroes at this time is a Russian engineer named Korolev, and Sergei Korolev, and he was probably, if you've seen The Right Stuff, it's a popular movie of 10 years ago, Tom Hanks, maybe more than 10 years ago, Tom Hanks produced it, and it's a, Tom Hanks produced it, and it featured, I'm trying to think who all was in it, it was based on the Tom Wolfe novel, The Right Stuff. Sergei Korolev is listed in there as the secret designer. And I always wondered about why this guy was a secret designer. He was the Wernher von Braun, if you will, of the Russian space program. The Russians had many firsts in space, and they're still very proud of these. The first artificial satellite, Sputnik, the first human in space, Yuri Gagarin, the first spacewalk, the first EVA, and first probe to photograph the backside of the moon. And there's it's a long list. Really, the Russians view the United States as second citizens in space, having paved the way, watch, you know, the United States come in behind them and capitalize on all the risks that the Russians have pioneered. And in some ways, I agree with it. But Korolev was an airplane designer, a very famous one. Before World War II, he was put in prison in these political purges that Stalin had, and he served in this design bureau that was really inside a prison along with some other very notable people in Russia. And so he endured incredible hardships all throughout World War II, except for the very end, where he was this brilliant guy, had tremendous capability to help Russia, but he was a prisoner. And every time, and he got out at the end of the war, and they made him he emerged to lead their rocket program, and he had 20 years of huge success doing that. Died in about 1965 from a BOFT surgical procedure for something relatively minor. But every time I think I have difficulty, I think of what that guy went through.
We're talking to Captain Bill Shepherd, who's currently the science and technology advisor for SOCOM, the U.S. Special Ops Command. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Anything Is Possible with Jack Rasula on News Talk 760 WJR.
Our guest tonight was the commander for Expedition 1, the first crew ever stationed at the International Space Station, Captain Bill Shepherd. October 31st, 2000, and you ascend for the fourth time, this time from a pad in Russia where 50 years ago the first Sputnik, the same pad. What was that feeling like?
Well, it was a historic moment. I think we all knew it when we were out there. I think prior to our flight, the Russians had sent something like 409 vehicles to orbit off that very same pad. This was a rocket that was directly descended from the rockets that Korolev designed and built. I mean, this was a moment of space history. It was pretty electric. The most interesting thing about that day was that a launch pad in Florida is a fairly hazardous place. You've got a big vehicle, lots of things that are hazardous materials, explosive even. And so they try and keep the number of people who are not essential to the task of getting you ready for liftoff to a minimum. You're out at the pad with your crew and probably 5 or 6 technicians, and that's it. Everybody else is 3 to 4 miles away. Here we are in Russia, right at the base of a fully fueled rocket, ready to go, and there are 400 or 500 people yelling and screaming and cheering right there with you. And I think probably some of them are smoking and drinking, too. So, I mean, it's unprecedented.
We're with Captain Bill Shepard. Captain, one of the two cosmonauts you went up and spent 141 days in the space station with was a fighter pilot whose job previously was to train to shoot down American pilots. And you being in the Navy, the Russians were adversaries. How did you learn to trust and work with different Russian cosmonauts?
Well, Jack, it's quite interesting. I think that on a personal level, if anybody got along well, it was the cosmonauts and astronauts and also the engineers and scientists at the operational level in these programs. I had lived and trained with Yuri and Sergei for 5 years. We knew each other well. I was at the point with both of these guys where we called it brain sharing. I could want to have something done, and these guys would just do it. Or they had some problem, I would know instinctively what they were talking about when they were doing it without saying it. Our instructors, the Russian ones in particular, were a little bit worried about our crew because we had this interaction that was undetectable. But we got along really well, and I have to say, I was a little bit apprehensive about how we would deal with 4.5 months of relative isolation on the space flight. But for whatever reason, our flight just kept getting better and better. And I was actually sad to leave the station when it was all done. I was very eager to get home and see my wife and friends. But there was this element that was left behind up there that I don't think will be, you know, it's a very unreal thing, and you don't have those working conditions all that often in your adult life.
Captain Bill Shepard, you were the first expedition in the International Space Station. Have you ever talked to Yuri Gagarin or Neil Armstrong about being the first?
No, I have not. Unfortunately, Yuri met his death in an airplane accident in the late 60s. Would have liked to have had his views on, well, let me back up even more. I've seen a lot of Russian media and publicity about Yuri Gagarin, and I think part of the role that he got put in, maybe it was one that he didn't want. There have been some really interesting documentaries about this, but he was thrust into the world stage and was very much, he was an icon at an early age, larger than life, and I'm not sure that anybody would take that adjustment well. I think it's a very difficult role for anybody to be put in. I have met Neil Armstrong once, but did not have a chance to really share any thoughts with him. I have discussed with some other astronauts, Jim Lovell and Wally Schirra in particular, some of the difficulties of the command role and dealing with both the crew and people in ground control about what is a commander responsible for and how should he or she behave and act. And I think it's a role that's still evolving in the program today.
Tom Friedman's famous book, The World is Flat. the International Space Station. There were 16 nations involved, 12,000 teammates from all over the world. What does the International Space Station teach us, Captain Bill Shepard, about collaboration and being one peoples?
Well, I think that the space station program shows that we can make it work. Back in the early days of the present program in 93, I was approached by one of our Japanese partners who said, they called me Shep. I said, Shep, you know, you guys, you're a new management team coming in here. You're reorganizing everything. We understand that. You are restructuring all the industrial contracts. We understand that. And you are relocating the whole program from the Virginia area down to Houston. And you're doing another redesign of the program, and you're changing the partnership. And he looked at me and he said, you know, I got to be honest with you. I don't think you guys are going to make it. But the space station's up there today. It's been flying for 10 years, and by every account, it is carrying the mail and being successful, and it's well on its way to emerging as the world's premier orbital science facility ever. And I think that that shows what a collaboration can do. As a matter of fact, I think the space station today is quite the model for the international cooperation that we are going to need to go elsewhere in the solar system. I think a Mars expedition, maybe even going back to the moon, could use a station model as a way to engage people of other countries and make some really good things happen.
What are your thoughts or desires or dreams about the future of our space program, Bill Shepard?
Well, I'm of the opinion that our program today is at a crossroads. We have lots of challenges, but they are mostly ones of public interest, governmental support. So I would wish for a space program that has tremendous vision. Of all the things that we do in the federal government, the amount of resources that we can put on things that are really discretionary, like the space program, is a very small amount. And the space NASA and the space program is one of the fundamental things that will determine how we will live differently in the future. The space program really is a big part of our future. I don't think that our vision for determining where people can go, how they should live, what they can do other places besides Earth, I don't think that vision is strong enough.
Last question, Captain Bill Shepard. What advice would you give to our young listeners this evening?
Well, there are several tidbits that I would offer up. I think